there we are. We want to bring in right now, big sports weekend on the horizon. Our sports director, great friend of the show, Jeff Hathorn, joins now. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Colin.
Hello. Have the injury report for the Steelers become clearer as we get through this? And there's also injury news with the Pitt Panthers as their kicker's out. Did you see this?
He's out sick. Like, who is around him? Like, how is he not isolated in a bubble somewhere? But yeah, that's disappointing news, because you feel like if Pitt's where they want to be, the kicker's going to play a big part of it. Now, that being said, they had a close competition in camp, so hopefully the guy who actually ended up being three, because the number two guy left, Sam Carpenter, can come through.
Yeah, and the Steelers, are they healthy, or at least as healthy as you can be?
So Alex Highsmith, outside linebacker, out, a pectoral injury. It's the third different injury he's had already this season, which really stinks, because a couple of weeks ago he was the AFC Defensive Player of the Week and had been playing really well. So not having him, that's a blow for the Steelers. Isaac Seumalo is a questionable, so probably more of a game-time decision. He is also dealing with a pectoral injury. He missed the last game. So, I mean, that's key injury news. And Darius Slay, the starting corner, will not play. So James Pierre is going to be a starting corner as they go against the best tandem of receivers in the NFL.
James Pierre, boom or bust guy, always kind of has been. Let's start with Saturday, though. It's tomorrow, Pitt and Notre Dame. This one, to me, has had a vibe much the same, and I think I sat near you for this game way, way back. Do you remember when it was Charlie Weiss and Dave Wannstedt's both first game with their new programs, so to speak?
And
you remember that? Samardzija came in, Brady Quinn. I think Tom Zabikowski was on that team. Notre Dame ended up swarming them, and that was very early in the year. But the buildup to it was gigantic. The buildup kind of feels the same here, Jeff. Would you agree to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the most buildup I've seen for a game in Pittsburgh was the last game of Pitt Stadium. And the Panthers pulled that one out. They were heavy underdogs. John Terman was the quarterback for Pitt back then for Walt Harris. And they found a way to get a win. Like, that was an exciting game. So there have been some big games here. But this one, Pitt's won five straight. And, you know, if you look at it objectively, while Jeremiah Love's a really good tailback for Notre Dame, like, the exciting player offensively is on Pitt's side. And a true freshman, Mason Heinschel, like, he's now starting to get a lot of attention nationally, and this is a big opportunity, not just for the Panthers, but for him to really cement himself as, if not one of the best young players, maybe one of the best quarterbacks in the nation.
I have talked about this. Is the state of college football, or the enjoyment of college football, even if you hate them, is it more enjoyable when Notre Dame's good?
Yes. Yes, for that very reason, because for as many – they are the polarizing. They are the Yankees. They are the Cowboys, whatever team you want to put in. But Notre Dame, like, there aren't many people who are kind of like, Notre Dame – it's you love them or you hate them. And the thing about them is they've got fans everywhere. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of them that they bought their tickets early. Pitt fans at 2-2 are probably like, I don't know. Notre Dame fans bought up a ton of tickets. We'll see how many show up in the stands, but we're going to see a good percentage of the other blue and gold.
Maybe to tie in the whole weekend, as they're not playing tonight, they're playing tomorrow, but it feels as if Notre Dame is on a heavy path to try to get McKeesport running back Keamon Spell. One would think they may visit him this weekend or at least talk to him, but they're playing tomorrow. Is this is that something you hear as well?
Yes, and he loved his visit there. And in fact, one of the touchdowns he scored last week, he did a celebration that mimicked the celebration that Notre Dame's running back does. So that probably tells you that they're a front runner, if not a big contender for him. And if you look at teams that focus on the run game, like, it's hard to find a team that does it more than Notre Dame, and probably will continue to do it more than Notre Dame, which is a big advantage. I mean, listen, Pitt wants to run the football, but Notre Dame is really committed to it, and that's going to make Keamon Spell's decision. I mean, unless somebody really, you know, comes up with a financial offer that beats Notre Dame, I would say that he's probably going to end up being a Fighting Irish.
Sunday, Steelers, quick turnaround. Will we be talking about the state of the actual playing field at Acrisure Stadium?
Yeah, let's hope not. Potentially, yes, because they're going to do one more resodding, but that's not going to be until after the WPIAL championships. So, I mean, they weren't on it last weekend, neither of them. So what you hope is that rain stays away like it's scheduled to until well after the game. They can cover the field after they make whatever changes or touch-ups they need to do and have it, you know, as best condition they can for Saturday, for Sunday rather. In a way, I mean, I don't know. Does it help the Steelers if it's bad for footing for guys who aren't used to it, like the Bengals receivers?
Is Aaron Rodgers getting a pass of sorts because of his history and because he's one of the greats? And if his name wasn't Aaron Rodgers and he had the same output, we'd be criticizing him more as a city?
Maybe, but I think this, and myself included, if 2 weeks ago you asked me who's the MVP of the Steelers, I would have said Aaron Rodgers. And I think most people would have. So the fact that he's had a bad game, I mean, the game against the Colts wasn't great, but they won. But last week was horrible. I think he gets a pass because he's been so much better than people anticipated. And, you know, for a couple of games this year, it's actually like the Steelers have a real offense, unlike what we've seen for most of the last 5 years.
If it is windy, as it's predicted for Sunday, does that take away Cincinnati's penchant to throw that deep ball? And we know that they'd like to throw the deep ball.
Yeah, I mean, maybe a little bit. But you know what Cincinnati did to allow themselves those passing yards? They were able to run it. I mean, they ran for almost 100 yards more than their season average in that game against the Steelers. And that really opened up everything. If the Steelers can't stop that run, I don't care what the wind is, Cincinnati's going to have success offensively. I mean, they've scored 80 points in the last two games. Both are losses, which is astounding. I mean, these guys score points. The thing is, they give up a ton.
Yeah, they do. That is, I never thought of that. And did you happen to catch PennDOT's act that they're shutting the parkway between 6 and 6 for spurts? That's pretty great planning, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, those schedules, they just came out, didn't they, the sports schedules?
Yes. Apparently, they're going to shut the tunnels during the NFL draft is the way they're going to do it.
Yeah, that'd be another great idea. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's emergency, but it's like, oh, come on, man. I realize we live in a cocoon world here in sports, but, I mean, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, last thing for you. If Jerome Bettis goes to the game in full Notre Dame gear, and he went there, will anybody heckle the bus?
I don't think so.
No.
Because he's a Hall of Famer.
He's got to pass.
If Chase Claypool shows up in full Notre Dame gear, I think all bets are off.
You know, somebody asked me the other day, they said, if you could go to this Pitt Notre Dame game with one person, who would it be? You know who my answer was? Rocky Blyer.
Oh, that's a good one. I would have said, God rest his soul, Bino.
Oh, I mean, come on. At dead or alive, that changes my answer. Absolutely, Bino. 100%. Jeff, you're the best. You're going to have a great weekend. Lots of great stuff going on in town. You're there to cover it, as always, for us. I appreciate it, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks, Colin.
Absolutely. Best in the business, Jeff Hathorn. Got an answer for everything and also the world's nicest man. So there is that. Looking forward to a lot of football. And it gets going tonight. Upper St. Clair, Peters Township in under an hour. We'll start you with the coverage. So here we go. A little bit of time left. I do want to get back into this ambitious plan. Maybe it's just a proposal at this point, not really a crystallized plan. By the city schools are wanting to get phones out of them. I'll meet him in the middle somewhere, but I can't go full bore. How about Pat Narduzzi saying, this was earlier in the week, Notre Dame is not a must win.
Absolutely not. You know, it is not an ACC game. I'm glad you brought that up. It's not an ACC game. You know, I gladly get beat 103 or 110-10 in that game. They can put 100 up on us as long as we win the next two after that. But again, our focus is on Notre Dame and getting as many wins as we can.
Say, notice he said 110 to 10. He doesn't want to get shut out, though. That's for no football coach wants to get shut out. They got to score a couple points. I like the way that he played that. It isn't a must win, but he wants a win. Big, come on. Something I talked about with Jeff just a moment ago. The state of college football and the atmosphere around college football, I don't know if anybody can argue with the fact that it's better when Notre Dame's good. It just, to see Notre Dame as like a 500 team or bad, college football in totality loses juice. Even if you can't stand them, it loses juice. And here's why. Because they're the most polarizing franchise, so to speak, in college football. They are, as Jeff alluded to, like the New York Yankees. You never walk up to somebody and go, what do you think about Notre Dame? And they go, No, they say, oh, yeah, I love them. They start telling you about Rocket Ishmael and Quadri Ishmael, Rocket Ishmael and Rick Meyer and all those kind of people, and they love it. Or they say, I can't stand them. I hated Charlie Weiss. I hate Lou Holtz and his lisp. I hate everything else. There's nobody that's like, eh. So by virtue of that, when they're good, the atmosphere of college football becomes better because you have these dyed-in-the-wool Notre Dame people that scream for them, have to get them, can't get enough of them, love them. And then when they're good, you have people rooting just as much for their team to win as they are for Notre Dame to lose, even if they're not playing each other. And it creates a great sports theater. It just does. So I like it when they're good. You know, I have turned into somebody who sports is purely back to being entertainment. It's not my life. It just is. But I will stop when Notre Dame's on and turn it on because it adds such intrigue. They own an entire religion. They own an entire network. They seemingly feel as if, even if they're not, that they're holier than thou and bigger than everyone else. So it creates that David Goliath for everybody else in college football at times. It's a neat dynamic. Just is. All right, city schools. Phones out. Will this work? We talk next. That's the most previewed event in preview history. Larry's previewing that he's going to have a preview. That's something. 866-391-1020. That's 866-391-1020. Huh. Anyhow, so here we go. So you got a couple people from the city schools, and they're adamant. Adamant might be too strong. They definitely want to tell you that they want to institute a new phone policy. And I'm here to tell you I'm skeptical about it. First, I want you to hear from a woman named Elizabeth Sattler. She's the solicitor.
The board would prohibit the use and or possession of any electronic devices, including cell phones, by students during the school day. Students would be allowed to bring the device with them to school, but not on the, be allowed to use it on the school bus, and must turn the device into school personnel upon entry into the building.
All right, let me stop you right there. You're certainly a solicitor, which means you got a law degree, and you're an attorney. Do you live on this planet? Because I want to ask you this. Who's going to enforce this on the school bus? The school bus driver? City school bus driver. First of all, a bunch of kids take the PAT bus. And then a bunch of buses are contracted out. Some guy driving some van with a couple kids in it, or even a full-size school bus. All due respect to Elizabeth Sattler, the city school solicitor. The last thing my man's worried about and is going to be worried about and is going to enforce is some kid sitting seven rows behind him playing some game on his phone. It's just not going to happen. So I don't know what universe you reside in, but it's not this one. I'm sorry. Second of all, upon entry to the school, a staffer will take your phone and then give it back at the end of the day, is your best laid plan. Somebody brought like a Bowie knife into Carrick, and it was one kid not too long ago. And there was a really bad incident. That was one kid trying to get a knife in, and he did. What do you think the success rate's going to be when 400 kids try to get a phone in and they are stopped and somebody says, hey, do you have a phone? And they go, no. Do you think there's going to be a real comprehensive search of these kids? They're just going to keep it moving. And then let's get to this. When you stop them and take these phones, where are you going to put them all day? Where are you going to store them? You building coat check rooms? What are you doing here? How are you going to manage this? Who's going to manage it? How are they then going to get their phone back at the end of the day and ensure it's theirs? What policies in place to make sure they get theirs? Are you carrying insurance in case you lose it? How does that all work? Let's move from the school solicitor to a member of the board, Sylvia Wilson.
I've had many parents, and I've even talked with students where the phones have created dangerous situations in some cases. And if a child needs to reach their parent, it isn't necessary to have a cell phone on them. The office is there.
Okay. Well, I can meet her in the middle at least. First of all, the office is there, yeah, sure, but after school, there's like no pay phones and stuff. So the kids do need a phone to contact their parents. The most logical way to go about this is this. Kids can bring their phones to school. They got to stay in your backpack, right? Not allowed to bring them out in class. If you do, how about the teachers are the ones that instill a little discipline and say, you're out of here. Go to the principal's office, or they kick them out of class. Phone stays in your backpack. And I'm all for this. Same thing at lunch. No phones out at the cafeteria. How come? We're trying to encourage dialogue and you talking, you speaking, you communicating with each other face to face with, you know, words, not texting each other across the table. Let's do that. Meeting, or if you want to, go full board, no phones allowed at all. Can't bring them anywhere. Really shut it all the way down. These gray area kind of fixes aren't going to work. They're not. That's why I'm for this. Give the kids an opportunity to screw up and set parameters and guidelines. You can have your phone. You can have it in a backpack. You can have it walking around school. You can't have it in classroom. It's that simple. Too many of these people don't understand it's not 1972 anymore. There are moving parts with a school day. Kids have practice. Kids forgot their shirt. Where's my shoes? Hey, by the way, practice is canceled. It rained. We can't have baseball practice today. So I'll be home at this time. Actually, but there's no bus. I'm going to walk to grandma's house. She's not home. Where's the key? It's under the doormat, idiot. Oh, okay. I'll grab it. I'll stay at grandma's house there because she's at work. None of that can be communicated anymore. There's no payphones laying around. Kids need to have their phone in their backpack, especially kids that participate in extracurricular activities, especially city kids that are on the go and might be on their feet out of the house from like 7 till 7 if they play a sport. That's just how it is. So I appreciate it that they want to go ahead and limit distractions. I recommend this with the city schools. If you want to limit distractions, let's do this first. Let's kick the repeat offenders out of school. How about that? That would be your first step to things going well. Kids who keep showing you that they can't behave and don't belong, send them out. Expel them. Get them out. Stop giving them 200 chances. Phones are a problem. The ability for kids to have them all the time during class, disrupt class, whatever. You need to have the kids, especially at the upper grades, who don't want to learn, who are there to screw off and hang out of there. Send them to an alternative school. Send them to this place. Send them to George Jr., that exists anymore, places like that. Send them to somewhere else. Send them anywhere but your building. They don't have a right to be there if they're not playing by the rules. It's time for the city schools to have a superintendent that gets tough on discipline, protects the teachers, makes the teachers not people who have to step in with every single piece of legislation, and lay it out hard. If you could lop off the kids that come there with no intent on learning and just an intent on screwing around, some of these problems will fix themselves. Now, there should be a cell phone policy, but start with that big overarching part, especially at the city schools, and I think you might see it heading in the right direction. I mean, I think there's only one person in existence doing news in this whole country who could have phrased that last update the way that he did, and it was David Bolorado. He did his own tease within a newscast. It was a tease to throw to the newscast. It was to tease you for 6 o'clock, but he teased it within itself, where you were teased for like 3 seconds before he got to what he wanted to talk to about. I mean, it was fascinating. Guys, I'd like to get inside his brain and really see what was going on. He's maybe the smartest guy I've ever met, David Bolorado. He just thinks a little bit differently. Man, alive, was that good. Anyway, 866-391-1020. I was talking about cell phones. Also, I forgot to tell you what national day it was today. I'll get to that in a moment. Tim's in North Hills. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Colin. Hope things are going good for you, man. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My kids are all grown up, but looking at the cell phone situation, even at restaurants, how everybody's just down looking at their phone while they're at restaurants and stuff. School cell phones, I think, are definitely a problem. But why don't they just put, help me on this, just go back to some phones in the hallways, like, and they have to have a phone pass to be able to use the phone. And kids need to make a call, they get a phone pass, and they go make it, and they can have their cell phones in their backpack, like you said. Or do they not have anything going, like, in each classroom, you just put your phone in the tray, or does that...
Then my kids have that at their... You know what they have, Tim? And it's neat, because I went to, like, meet the teacher night or whatever, you know, like, open house, whatever. The teachers, some of them have... It kind of looks like an advent calendar, you know what I mean? So they'll have, like, allocated numbers, like 1 through 30 or 31, and somebody's like, hey, I'm number 17, and they put their phone in number 17 during the class, then on the way out, they grab it. And I find that to be pretty good.
That sounds great. And one more thing, Colin, and then this will be it for me. You having kids in school, I work with kids at night. I teach a sport, but... that's not my full-time job. I have a business. But the thing is, I think kids know that they're distractions. I mean, even though they like to use their phone, I mean, I sit down and I talk to a few kids that I work with teaching gymnastics. And when I ask them about school and cell phones, just to see what's in the loop, because I'm old now, they admit, like, I'd say 7 out of 10 kids say phones definitely distract them from teaching. So I think kids are pretty good. I really do. It's just a few bad ones that you were talking about, the late ones.
I agree. I agree, and that's a great call. I think you're right. And I think that kids, we sell kids short sometimes, that every single kid has their face in their phone all the time, if we allow it. You know, if you don't allow that atmosphere at home, it doesn't happen as much. Now... to what he was saying before about, like, at the table, I don't think they should be in cafeterias at all. Like, not at all. That should be an outlawed part of the school. But my kids, the reason they have theirs, and they take them to school, but they have it for schedule changes. If my daughter's wrestling schedule changes, if she forgot something at home, and it's a quick call. But they know. They know 100%. Do not take that phone out of your backpack. And I've said this many times. When I get home, I'll throw it in the woods. You'll never see it again. I'm fine with that. It's okay. Something out in the woods will eat it. You'll never see that phone again. You won't have to worry about taking it out in school. You won't have it.